This is Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Episode 2, Mayor Adam O'Neill, Part 1.
A columnist from the University of North Carolina did a study as far as the financial impact of us losing our hospital. The financial impact to our town is $17 million a year.
Welcome to the Rural Health Leadership Radio with your host, Dr. Bill Oxier. Each week, Dr. Oxier has a conversation with a different rural health leader to discuss what's working and what's not working in rural health, along with other topics of interest to rural health leaders. Rural Health Leadership Radio's goal is to improve health in rural America by providing a simple, no-cost means to share information and connect rural health leaders from around the country. And now, here's Dr. Oxier with today's guest.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Oxier, and I welcome you to Rural Health Leadership Radio. Today, we're talking with the Honorable Adam O'Neill, Mayor of Belhaven, North Carolina. Welcome, Mayor.
Glad to be with you, Bill.
Well, thank you. Just to tell everybody a little bit about Mayor O'Neill, he was born in Belhaven, North Carolina, and he graduated from the local high school, the John A. Wilkinson High School, in 1987. From there, he went on to attend the North Carolina State University and graduated in 91 with a degree in business management. After college, he moved back home, back to Belhaven, and began working as an insurance and securities broker. In 1999, he started a real estate company as well called O'Neill & Associates Real Estate. Mayor O'Neill has four children, two boys and two girls, and his parents also reside in Belhaven, where he's been elected mayor for six terms. Mayor O'Neill is a registered Republican in a town of 60% African-American voters. In July of 2014, the hospital in Belhaven closed, and the closure of this hospital gained national attention through Mayor O'Neill's 273-mile protest walk to Washington, D.C. It's quite a story, Mayor, and I truly appreciate you being a guest on Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Glad to be here.
So when I met you, I had the good fortune of meeting you and listening to your presentation at the Rural Health Association of Tennessee meeting last year. And in your presentation, it was clear to me that you were passionate about rural health. Why are you so passionate about rural health?
Well, when you're talking healthcare, especially in the aspect of a hospital, you're talking about people getting life-saving services that they need. For example, in our community, when the hospital closed, now we have people having heart attacks, strokes, severe accidents, snake bites, not being able to get service anymore. We've got a lot of poor people here who have a hard time getting around. To give you an idea of how damaging it is for a hospital to close, we simply had a man last week, we're on the coast of North Carolina, we had a man get a treble hook caught in his lip. Local clinic now that Vidant Health, the people who defrauded us of our hospital, the local clinic they set up couldn't even take the fishing hook out of the man's lip. So the quality and the amount of health care we have now in our community is extremely small compared to what we used to have. And the thing is, in Belhaven, we didn't have to lose our hospital. We've got a situation here where one of the big health care conglomerates, billion-dollar corporation, came in, and through misrepresentation and outright defraud in the community, closed our hospital. And, I mean, what they did should be against the law, should be a criminal act. And ever since they closed our hospital, we've been fighting to reopen it against efforts by this big conglomerate, Vidant Health, to keep us from reopening. So not only did the big hospital conglomerate come in and shut our hospital, but now they've been allowed to continuously fight us every step of the way to reopening our hospital. So it's a unique situation, I think. There may be some other cases around the country. But I think sometimes hospitals fail, and there was no way for them to succeed. But we do have a situation in this country right now where some of these big conglomerates are wanting to close these rural hospitals for their bottom line, not for the concern of the citizens out here in rural America. Mm-hmm. And in rural America, with a geography, we have to have emergency rooms. If we don't, people die. And we've had many people die in our community due to the lack of an emergency room.
When the hospital closed 2 years ago, how did you find out that the hospital was closing?
Well, about 9 months before the hospital closed, I was sitting in my office one day, and a local TV station, WITN, reporter called me and wanted a comment on the hospital closing. So I knew nothing about it. So Vidant Health had come in 2 years earlier promising to maintain and strengthen our hospital, to add lots of services and that sort of thing. And then 2 short years later, they decided to close the hospital without any community input whatsoever.
So you were totally blindsided.
Totally. And the reason they did that was because they didn't want to work with the community to try to save the hospital. They wanted to close the hospital to prop up another hospital they owned close by. And they knew that hospital was in severe shape and was going down. And they thought, well, more people live in Washington, North Carolina than Belhaven. So what we'll do is we'll just close Belhaven and Bruce, Washington, even though Belhaven wasn't in as bad a shape as Washington was.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a situation where in this country right now, there's some consolidation going on. There's some business strategy being used like you would use if you owned a bunch of hardware stores. But these aren't hardware stores. These are hospitals. These are the difference between our children having life-saving services or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about Vidant Health is that they made $109 million in the year they closed our hospital. Now, they're a nonprofit, which is supposed to be for the community. They're a nonprofit. They made $109 million. They've got a mission of providing access and quality of care to Medicaid patients. And they closed our hospital in a year. They made $109 million and had over $700 million in reserves. That sort of thing should not be tolerated. The problem is in our country right now, the politicians are scared to death of the lobbyists that have to do with the healthcare industry. So they're not doing anything about it. They're letting folks do things like this.
Yeah.
And that was one of the motivations of me walking to D.C.
Okay. So you alluded to some of the ramifications of the hospital being closed with the brief examples that you gave. But what have been the ramifications of the hospital's closure?
Well, our hospital served about 20,000 people. It had about 5,500 visits a year to the emergency room. It employed 129 people. We had a business plan that showed it actually needed 55 employees. That's the reason the hospital was losing money. It was overstaffed.
Okay.
We did have all the people coming to town. We had the patients' families, and a columnist from the University of North Carolina did a study as far as the financial impact of us losing our hospital. The financial impact to our town is $17 million a year of money that doesn't run through Belhaven anymore. $17 million a year.
That's significant for a small town.
And when you talk about a town, you know, with about 1,800 population that serves a big rural area, but our actual town's about 1,800 people, you're talking about a significant impact. Vidant Health ripped the heart right out of our town and could care less and did it once again through fraud.
That's terrible and very difficult for any town, large or small, to have that big of an impact, no matter what the scale. You alluded to some of the ramifications, too, from a health point of view.
Well, we have people dying. We had a lady, I don't know, about 7 or 8 months ago, an older African-American lady who had health problems. But she would have this one certain thing happen to her every so often. I don't know her condition. I don't know exactly what it was. But it was something that her daughter would put her in the car, take her over to the emergency room, and they'd get her right. They had done it 8 or 10 times, the daughter told me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this time when she had her episode, the daughter was thinking, well, I don't know if I can get her to Washington. I better call 911 to get her to Washington. The paramedics came. They sat around her bed for about an hour trying to decide and ascertain if they could move her, if she could take the trip to Washington. Finally, they got her on the rescue squad after about an hour and started her to Washington, and she died just before they got to Washington.
Yeah.
Now, before, that lady would have had a five-minute, maybe four-minute ride to the hospital. Instead, she had longer than that, about 30 to 35-minute ride. We had a young man with a farming accident that fell off a tractor and was cut up really bad, but they thought he was going to survive. Everybody talks in rural America about the helicopters. Well, the helicopters are great and they're a benefit, but they're not a solution to everything. This young man was in a field. Actually, a personal friend of mine found him. He was in the field. They called the rescue squad. The rescue squad came. And the rescue squad decided he needed a helicopter. So they called for the helicopter while they were sitting out in the field. They waited for the helicopter to come. by the time the helicopter got to this 16-year-old boy, he had lost so much blood he'd gone into shock. So then the helicopter, if you're not stable, they won't put you on the helicopter around here. So the helicopter takes off and flies back to Greenville and leaves that boy in the field. Mm-hmm. So they throw him in the rescue squad. They rush him to Washington, North Carolina. And then after about 15 or 20 minutes, he passes away. And the 50-year doctor here, Dr. Boyette, said he basically bled to death. So that's a 16-year-old boy possibly could be walking around here contributing to our community. But we have Portia Gibbs, and I can go on and on with examples. The lady had a heart attack, waited for an hour for a helicopter when she would have been in an emergency room in 25 minutes. She waited for an hour. 45 minutes into that hour, she was talking to the rescue personnel. As the helicopter landed, she passed away, once again, without any emergency room services. Another thing, you've got these emergency response rescue folks, which are heroes, and we're so thankful to have them. But they seem to want to think that an ambulance is like an emergency room. And any doctor that knows what's going on knows how silly that is. Mm-hmm. It's not even close. But we've got people running around here acting like if a rescue squad picks you up, it's just like being in an emergency room, when it's absolutely not. So you've got a lot of misinformation that goes on, too, when these hospitals close. And especially when you have a situation like ours where your hospital closes through devious deeds.
Those are heartbreaking stories, Mayor. Thank you for sharing those with us, and you've shared some great information with us. Right now, we're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back to continue our conversation with our guest, Mayor Adam O'Neill.
There are a lot of great leaders out there leading rural hospitals who are under a tremendous amount of pressure. Being a C-level executive of a rural hospital carries a great deal of complexity and a great deal of responsibility. No matter what your leadership effectiveness score may be, there's always room for improvement. As John Maxwell says, great leaders are always evolving, always improving. And that's why the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health was created, to assist rural health leaders achieve greatness. All of us deal with self-awareness, and there's always going to be a gap between how we see ourselves and how others see us. And the larger that gap, the more difficult it is to be an effective leader. That's where an executive coach from the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health can help. We'll work with you one-on-one to identify gaps, to narrow those gaps, and more. Our goal is to make great leaders better, to make great leaders more effective, to assist you in achieving greatness. Guaranteed. All leadership development programs offered by the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health have an unprecedented guarantee. If you don't get results, there's no fee. No growth, no fee. So call or email us today. All Rural Health Leadership Radio listeners receive a complimentary discovery session. So you can call us at 813-658-0422 or send an email to bill@billoxier.com. That's bill@billoxier.com. Be the leader you want to be. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health guarantees it. Call or email today to get your discovery session scheduled.
We're having the most interesting conversation today with the Honorable Adam O'Neill, Mayor of Belhaven, North Carolina. So when we were last talking before the break, Mayor, you were talking about some of the ramifications, both the financial ramifications to your community and the health ramifications, with some heartbreaking stories there. Why did you walk to Washington, D.C.?
Well, we had some rallies. We invited, said they were going to close our hospital. We had some public rallies. I'd have 300 to 400 people show up. So then invited, and eventually through, and a lot of things took place, which would take hours to explain, but we ended up doing the mediation with Vidant about keeping our hospital open. We got an agreement put together, and Vidant had absolutely no intention of living up to the agreement. They did an agreement just to get the federal mediator that was sent here by the Justice Department, just to get her out of town, and then they immediately went to undermining the mediation agreement. So what they did is they saw the mediation agreement as a way to act like the town didn't follow through, and it's the town's fault that the hospital's closed, which, of course, was not true.
Okay.
So the mediation agreement said all tangible and intangible assets will be transferred to the new community organized board. Well, the first thing Vidant did is they called our attorney and said, well, we don't think cash on hand or accounts receivable are tangible or intangible assets of the hospital. And, oh, yeah, by the way, that record system that you've got, that was about $1 million that was put in with a grant, that's not part of the assets of the hospital. And, oh, yeah, $1 million we're supposed to give you July 1st to keep the hospital going, we're going to put some stipulations on that. So they started changing things within 2 weeks of the mediator leaving. So once again, here was more deceit. And when they closed our hospital July 1st, you know, everybody was really upset here.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, if the hospital closed and just couldn't make it, that would be one thing. But we had a business plan done by a rural hospital operator on our hospital to see if it was actually even feasible. Because I didn't want to be kicking a dead horse here. If we had a hospital that was going to lose millions and millions of dollars every year, I mean, it wouldn't be sustainable.
Right.
We had a business plan done, and it showed that the reason our hospital failed was because it had 129 employees when it needed 55.
Okay.
If it had been right-sized the last year the community operated, it would have made money.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've gone through the mediation. That's been undermined, and the hospital closed July 1st, 2014. About July 5th or so, something like that, or 7th, I was at a county commissioner's meeting to talk about the hospital situation. And Dr. Boyette, our 50-year physician here, called me and told me that we had our first death. And that was Portia Gibbs. So it was at the dinner break of the county commissioner's meeting. And I had thought about how to bring attention to the horrible thing that had happened in our town. And I thought about a walk. I know a march, Gandhi, and different ones. That's the way they brought attention. And a march has, I learned later on, extreme powerful effects.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about walking, and at that county commissioner's meeting, when I heard she passed away, I was the first speaker after the dinner break, and I announced I was going to walk to Washington, D.C. At that time, I had not really paid any attention to how far it was.
Yeah.
So on the way home, I was like, good land, how far is that? So anyway, found out it was about 280 miles or so. And then I tried to figure out what a Civil War soldier used to walk a day, because I knew they had bad shoes.
Yeah.
And I thought they could walk 20 or 25 miles, so I thought I ought to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And short 4, 5, 6 days later, I took off for D.C. And the purpose of it was to bring attention to what was going on in Belhaven. I also knew that, you know, this was probably something that was happening in other places in the country. So when we took off, we had a lot of national coverage. Basically, every news outlet covered us, and it gave us momentum. So when I got to Washington, D.C., Obama set up for me to meet with the second-in-command of everybody that had anything to do with the rural hospital. And the result of that was when I got home, the USDA called us and said, how much money do you need? And they put up a $6 million loan for us.
Wow.
The sad thing is we've had that $6 million loan commitment for quite a while, over a year now, and Vidant's efforts and their lawless efforts have kept us from being able to access that money, because we need the property to do so. Because Vidant, when they left town, they left the property with some of their lawless to protect it from it being reopened. So Vidant played a legal game to keep the hospital in people that were partial to them, to try and keep a hospital from ever opening up in Belhaven again. Now, I ask you, is a nonprofit working in healthcare, is it in their line of business to stop other healthcare providers from opening up?
Well, you certainly wouldn't think so.
A nonprofit? Of course not.
Yeah.
But that's going on, and it's going on all over the country, where nonprofits are making $100 million a year. Their executives are splitting up the profits, and the people are being treated as if it's a for-profit. And the fact is, there are places in society where we need nonprofits and we need some government help because they're so essential, like a police station, like a fire department, and certainly a hospital. I think a hospital is a lot more important than a police department or a fire department. If you told me in Belhaven you got to pick two out of three, either the fire department or police department would go. We would never give up our hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very difficult political game that's going on. And the lobbyist in D.C., in Raleigh, we had a horrible fight in Raleigh about a certificate of need. These folks are trying to do things that hurt citizens. That first walked to D.C., ended up with us getting a loan, and also ended up with us getting a lot of national notoriety, which has helped in other things as we've gone.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there's a lot of politics involved.
Intense politics.
more than we want to even consider, let alone realize. During the walk, as I recall, it sounded like you had some interesting experiences during the walk itself. Can you expand on that?
I think the most touching thing that was happening is as we were walking through the country roads of North Carolina, Virginia, we would have, for example, an 18-wheeler loaded with logs. We'd hear them hitting their brakes.
Mm-hmm.
We turn around and look, and it's this guy in his log truck stopping his truck to give us $20.
Oh, man.
I remember in Virginia particularly, this guy was in a real old Toyota small pickup truck, 30-year-old pickup truck, and the man obviously was not a very wealthy man, and he stopped by us, and he said, "You guys are walking for those hospitals, aren't you? You know, for that hospital."
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, "Yes, sir." He gave us $10. That $10 was like $1,000 to a lot of people. That man did not have a lot of $10 to be given away.
Yes.
But he knew they had a hospital in his area that he was worried about too, and he wanted to help us. We also had the governor of Virginia on the first walk. He met with us because of Medicaid expansion. In North Carolina, we're giving up about $4 billion a year, not except to Medicaid expansion. And I'm a Republican, and I understand where the Republicans are coming from. They're concerned about future obligations. But to have 100% pay by the federal government for several years, and then, you know, it steps down each year, but still is very highly subsidized, I thought was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's wrong when you have a 21-year-old girl who's working at McDonald's, doing the best she can. She gets cancer and can't get treatments because she doesn't have health insurance. I don't think, does anybody in this country really want that 20-year-old or 21-year-old daughter of someone not to be able to get treatment because they don't have money?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody does. There are some people that are that harsh, but I don't think most people do. And so we've got a big healthcare problem. And going back to your previous question, you know, you said something about politics.
Yes.
You know, the North Carolina Hospital Association was lobbying against us getting a certificate of need to reopen our hospital. The North Carolina Hospital Association. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. What was their rationale?
Their rationale is they're a big supporter of Vidant Health. Vidant Health is one of their big hospitals. And the head of the hospital association before has been a Vidant board member, and they're powerful. It's all politics.
Yeah.
Think about that. The North Carolina Hospital Association has not done one thing. They've done nothing to help us in Belhaven. And they're the hospital association.
Well,
and that what they have actually done is not help us, but actually try to stop us, help Vidant stop us. So that's the amount of politics that's going on. But we had a situation where in Belhaven, we had the money to reopen the hospital, the community wants to reopen the hospital, and the Certificate of Need Division in Raleigh, a man named Drexel Pratt was head of it, misinterpreted their own rules to try to keep us from getting a Certificate of Need. Their own rules said if you had an existing facility, you were exempt. And we had an existing facility that the power had never been cut off of. And they said we didn't have an existing facility just to keep us from reopening our hospital after all the work we've done. I ended up having to walk to Raleigh from Belhaven, threatening to walk around the governor's mansion until justice was done in order to get state law changed so that communities could reopen their own hospitals if they did it within a certain period of time. So every step of the way, it's just been a struggle.
Yeah, it sounds like the odds seem insurmountable. How do you keep going? How do you keep a positive frame of mind to keep plugging away on this campaign?
Well, some people say, why do you care? And I don't think they think very deep because let's think about this. Sooner or later, there's going to be, say, a little 5-year-old girl that's been in a car accident or has some accident where she needs some help right now. If we have a hospital and emergency room, that little girl's life is going to be saved. If we don't, that little girl's going to die. And that might not be a little girl. It might be a single mom. It might be somebody's grandmother that takes care of them, you know, that's taking care of minor children. Who knows? But it's going to be somebody of extreme importance to a community that is going to needlessly die. Now, if we could put a name, let's say it was little Cindy, a 5-year-old little girl, Cindy, who is really a little artist at kindergarten class and loves her mom and has a little puppy. If we think about it that way and we say this little girl is going to pass away if we're not successful with ripping this hospital, what would you do to save Cindy's life?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Now, some people can say, well, that's not my problem. Well, I happen to be one of those folks that take my job kind of seriously. I feel like I'm mayor of the town. It's my responsibility. If I see something that's really bad, I'm supposed to stand up for the people. So what do I do? Do I just let Cindy die, or do I fight so that one day when Cindy needs that emergency room, she has it? And then how much do you fight? And with me, I just set my mind up kind of early on that everything short of my children's health, I'll give up in order to save this hospital, because it's got to be saved. Because that's what it means. It means that little five-year-old girl with her puppy is going to be saved or not. And what would you do to save Cindy's life? And some people say, well, I'd do anything I could.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you do anything you can, that's an awful lot.
Yes.
If you really do everything you can, that's an awful lot. Now, some people, when Biden shut the hospital down, would have quit. He said, and then you could have quit. And everybody would have said you did it, you tried. You had rallies, you did all this stuff, you tried. Then, you know, we're on the walk. That was something that most people wouldn't have done, because they wouldn't have done everything they can.
Yeah.
And we've been on, you know, another walk to D.C. since then, another walk to Raleigh. We've been in lawsuits. We have got an incredible civil rights case going on where Biden, through their political methods, were able to remove a judge from our lawsuit for no cause and no process. We had a black judge that was sitting on our case that they had removed from our case with no legal process. Totally, the judges ignored the legal process and replaced our judge because Biden didn't like him.
Wow.
I mean, the stuff that's going on here is a hell of a movie.
Yes, it sounds like it. And unfortunately, we're out of time for this episode. So what I'd like to do is continue the conversation, though, in next episode. So for now, I'm going to say thank you, Mayor O'Neill, for joining us and sharing your story. It's both tragic and inspirational at the same time. So we'll continue this conversation and make this a two-part episode. So I want to thank our listening audience for listening. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please go to iTunes or Google Play or whatever your favorite podcast app is and subscribe to Rural Health Leadership Radio.
And if you'd like to leave a rating and review in iTunes, you can go to our website at www.rhlradio.com. That's R as in radio, H as in health, L as in leadership radio, rhlradio.com, and click on the iTunes link. To continue the conversation on leadership and rural health, you can also join our LinkedIn group. Just go to LinkedIn and search for the group Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Until next week, let's keep working to improve healthcare in rural America.
If you would like to connect with today's guest, please send an email with your contact information to bill@billoxier.com. If you would like to be a guest or suggest someone else as a guest, have a question you would like to ask, or simply want to contact Rural Health Leadership Radio, please use that same email address, bill@billoxier.com. That's bill@billoxier.com. You can also visit our website at www.rhlradio.com.
We'd ask that you please support our sponsor, the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health's mission is to improve rural health one leader at a time.